chronologically, so bear with me as I go through this. But I want to explain who you are exactly now, because I've done some reading on you. And explain to me how you would define yourself in this movement. Would you define yourself as a white separatist, or how would you define yourself?
I define myself, always have, as a white separatist.
And is that different than a supremacist?
Well, yes, because I have found out, the more I thought about it, the more I researched it, it seemed like the supremacy thing come more out of the South, and the separatist thing was more out of the North. Because I was raised in this town, we didn't have any blacks at all. There was no real racism, because the only blacks I ever saw was a fat Domino on a record cover until I went in the Army. But a lot of people in the North, they were more wanting to be separate. Down South, then that was a different deal. They were sort of in between the wealthy and the poor blacks, and they had a place there, and they wanted to maintain it, which I don't blame them in a way. But overall, I believe racial separation is what alleviates a hell of a lot of problems.
And if you, I mean, you subscribe to that notion for most of your life?
In the 60s, I got into right-wing politics, conservative. I worked with the Barry Goldwater campaign and worked in various independent parties and things like that. And then John Birch Society, and gradually became more racially involved.
And why do you think separatism would be beneficial?
Well, look at all the problems you've got in this country. Race issue. They're spending billions of dollars to, in many ways, almost forcefully integrate. In fact, they do forcefully integrate. And still we got big, big problems. There's no need for it. If they had freedom of choice, territorial imperative, in other words, if you want to live in a white neighborhood, you could be all white. If you want to live in an all-black neighborhood, be all black. Just like today with smoking. I mean, if you want to smoke, there should be places where you can smoke and have a beer. If you don't want to smoke, go to there. So I get along quite well with the black separatists on this subject. I don't want to rule over any other race, but I don't want any other race ruling over me.
Do you think, I'm going to get into the, I'm not true in a minute, but, you know, there's countries where this originated, where its ancestral roots are largely homogenous. And you see, like, you know, Iceland and Norway as being more of a superior nation because of that reason?
I believe any nation that's homogenous does better. Like, I have been to Japan on two speaking tours, and I found Japan a very good, nice country, and it's primarily a homogeneous group of people.
Is it because you think when people have a common biological, cultural, ancestral commonality that
absolutely. I believe that over the ages of people being culturally the same and many times in much the same religions and all this type of thing, that life is a lot easier. Not that it's perfect, and not that there's not problems, and not that there's not bad people and good people like that, but still it's much easier than when you, and now we're bringing them in from all over the world, and it's just going to mean a social upheaval from here on in.
Do you believe that Latinos and African Americans are inferior?
I've always said I leave Mother Nature decide that. I think if you look at an all-black country in Africa and then look at Northern Europe or in the United States in many places, you'll see a lot of difference. Let's put it that way. Their culture is not really our culture. Now, a lot of those people have adopted our culture, and some of them do quite well.
Some people would say, but Tom, you know, the beauty of America is this melting pot notion. You know, everyone who came here was an immigrant at some point or another. That our multiculturalism defines us, enables us to be a global people in this country. You know,
well, most of that was propaganda put out by the big shots and the money people. They wanted cheap labor just like they want cheap labor now from Mexico or wherever they can get it. Anything they can do to break the back of the working man, they'll do to get cheaper labor. So even back in the good old days, you know, where we had mostly Northern Europeans, and then they brought more Southern Europeans and Eastern Europeans in, well, luckily, for the most part, they have integrated and melded together. But when you have too much of a racial difference, you don't. Then you just balkanize, and that's what's happening now. It's not a healthy separation, it's balkanization.
How do you envision this white separatism being? Because I've read there are some movements saying, you know, the Pacific Northwest would be the best place for all white people to be, or something to that effect.
Well, at this late date, it doesn't make much difference to argue about it, because it's going to be a violent upheaval in this country sooner or later. If I took 10,000 people and tried to carve out an area in the Northwest, the government would just come in and stomp us down. We couldn't do it. You don't have that freedom. Everybody thinks you're so free in the United States. You're not as free as you think you are. So I said, you know, we can't do like the Mormons did and all go to Utah and boom. And even the Mormons, the United States Army was going to come out and squash them, but they made a deal. So you can't just go out and be by yourself, like a tribe. Because then everybody says, oh, well, we got this civil rights law. You got to have the blacks, you got to have these people, and like that. And that's what's going to cause a violent upheaval.
So when you say that, you really think there's enough simmering anger and resentment about this that that would actually happen?
Yes.
How, because I'm, you know, maybe I'm naive, but, you know, and I know there are all kinds of viewpoints, and you know, in a city like Chicago, for example, which is very segregated, you know, there are a lot of things that white people in certain circles will say. They won't say to mixed company, but I don't ever get the sense that there's enough anger that we're going to see that happen. Why do you think that is?
Well, not as long as things are going along fairly smooth. But economics is what always kicks it off. Gas goes to $10 a gallon. Jobs are gone. All that liberalism peels away in about 5 minutes when you can't feed your family and you got to do something drastic. See, it's still fairly easy now, but it isn't going to be easy. But it'll be economics to kick it off.
I assume I can guess which side of the Mexican immigration debate you're on.
Right. However, I'm not on the side of the big corporations for bringing them in here. I would go to the top. I wouldn't be persecuting the little guy. I'd go directly to the CEOs that run all these corporations and throw them in prison. And then I would say to the Mexican people, I gave a speech at the Mexican border way back in the 70s, and I said, look, we don't hate you, but we can't have you all coming up here. We will help you overthrow the rats in Mexico and the corporations that are from the United States that are screwing the Mexican people, and then you won't need to come up here.
You think your viewpoints are, I don't know, that you know, because there, you know what people will say. This is a fringe element. This is an extremism that is just non-representative of most of America. Is the kind of ideas that you subscribe to, do you think that's growing, that there's a momentum there?
All I need is 1%. I don't worry about the rest. 1% always run the show. The problem is we're not the 1%. So our struggles with the boys at the top and the crooked politicians and the crooked political parties, we straighten that out, all the rest will be fine. That'll come along just fine. We don't stand around on the corner trying to convince everybody going down the street to agree with us, no.
Now you, you know, again, my knowledge of the whole white separatism supremacy movement is real peripheral to my knowledge base. I mean, you know, I've covered Klan rallies and whatnot in the past. I've interviewed people, but you were never a member of the Klan, were you?
Yes.
You were years ago, but you're not anymore.
No, not since 1980.
Why is that?
Well, I found it was a little bit too reactionary and too restrictive. We didn't need uniforms. We didn't need cross fightings. We didn't need all that paraphernalia. We just had to be regular white working men. Our skin is our uniform, so we didn't need all that. Plus, I moved away from the Christianity thing too, and began to look in other areas for a more healthy mythology.
Now you don't. You consider yourself an Odinist?
If I'm not an Odinist, I'm a very good friend of Odin's.
Because I thought you were more an atheist.
I am an atheist.
Okay,
but
before you get to that, because that thing, I think of, when people think of the white separatist, white supremacist movement, they take a lot of their kind of ideology out of Christianity, their interpretation of Christianity.
Oh, yeah.
And you're talking to someone who's kind of agnostic. So,
yeah.
You know, to me, Odinism and Christianity are the same. I give them equal merit or no merit, but you know what I mean?
So
that's kind of, so when I started doing this story, I was surprised that there would be this segment rooted in something completely, totally different than Christianity. And then I started reading more, and I started understanding there is a belief in some circles that Christianity has failed this movement. Is that kind of what your thought was?
Well, yes, definitely. In fact, you couldn't go into any church that I know of and ask them, well, do you support what we believe in as far as separation and all that? No, then none of them would, except the Christian identity sect. And I used to be in that, too, a long time ago. But 99%, 99, 100% of Christianity is for mixing races. And
love thy neighbor.
And we're all equal, all that nonsense. And I moved away from that in 1980. I'll never go back.
And so when did you first hear about Ossetru? It's pronounced differently. I hear it Ossetru or Ossetru.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and then there's all these offshoots of it, the Odinism and whatnot. It's almost to me like being Christian and then Presbyterian or whatever. You know,
yeah, well, it's gotten a little confusing,
yeah.
But it didn't start out that way. Actually, the lady that really pushed it in this country was from Norway, I believe it was, Elsie Christensen. And I knew her personally. And it was Odinism, and it was her husband had helped start it too. And it was just hearkening back to the cultural and the mythology of the Nordic countries, and it was very simple, and it was right, you know. Then a lot of people started picking it up, making it like the Elks or the Boots or something. I mean, it started watering it down. Oh, well, we're going to have black people in here, we're going to this and that, and oh, we're not violent, and we never could, we don't fight, and all that. And, of course, I reject that just as much as I do the pacifism of Christianity.
So in its purest intent, or its purest creation, it is a white separatist type of belief system.
As far as the Odinists that I know, and the ones I've worked with ever since the 70s.
Because I told you, I've interviewed a couple women in the Chicago area who are practicing Odinists, or
yeah,
whatever they call themselves. And, you know, they denounce any connectivity whatsoever to white separatists.
Oh, I know. And even some of them that have been white separatists are too cowardly to come out and talk about it. And they'll say, no, we're not racist or anything like that. But that's why I would not become a real strong person in Odinism, because I don't want to be lumped in with the weak Christians anymore, and I want to be lumped in with the weak Odinists, you see. But I do, the people I associate with Odinists, it's a warrior religion, just like when I went to Japan. I was, Shintoism is very near to Odinism, and I was taken into the main Shinto temple in Tokyo and given the rites of Shinto. And I have a very high regard for Shintoism, too. But then you get others, there's people out here, as the rings go out, and they want to be accepted. Oh no, we're not like those guys, I mean, you know. So that's why mythology is mythology, you know. I love the myth and legends of Vikings and Thor and all that. That's exciting. And young kids really like it too. But as far as believing, as far as, you know, that there's something riding around in the sky, no more than I believe in Jesus or any of that stuff.
So yeah, you are still mythology, where some people are, and the women I talk to, they're worshiping Freya and Frigga.
Yeah, well, I don't worship anything. I would not want to be a part of any religion where you get on your knees.
Gotcha. But a lot of these Odinists they are. They do believe it's a religion.
Yeah, they do.
Where, you know, I've read different things about it in terms of its popularity, its growth. Where do you see it?
Well, I'm only looking at the segment of the separatists and the you know, the warrior religion type, and where it has moved very strongly among the youth, especially young males, and it's moved into the prisons. There's a lot of people inside the prisons who have given up on Christianity and gone with Odinism. They're sort of recognized as a church, you know, in many of the prisons and like that. So I see that growing quite well over the last few years, yeah.
And that's what I hear, although it's hard to quantify in some respects in prison. Like Illinois says, of the 45,000-some prisoners, they only know 31 that are self-identified, but then they could have been converts in prison because they self-identify when they go into prison, so who knows. But
yeah, it's hard to figure that.
As far as the white separatist movement is concerned, how does Odinism, jive with it, and what are the components here that make this so impossible?
Well, you know, the origins, you know, let's talk about the Vikings. You know, they didn't become warriors by choice. They ran out of farmland in the Nordic countries, if you study the history. They wanted to be farmers, but they ran out of room, so they went on to the high seas. And, I mean, we've had Viking colonies as far west as Oklahoma. There's a park in Oklahoma where the Vikings were there. There were Vikings up from Canada 6,000-7,000 years ago when the Atlantic Ocean was very, very smooth. And so, and they went around tribal. See, I'm a tribal person. Even beyond separatism, I believe in the tribalization within the race. You know, like, for instance, a lot of guys down south think still differently than guys up north about a lot of things. And so they want their tribalism, and we want our tribalism, and there's, you know, don't come down here and tell us what to do. And I don't want to go anyplace and tell anybody what to do.
It's kind of like Native Americans and their tribalism beliefs to ancestors.
Very similar.
Very similar. And then on the surface, then that seems pretty
benign.
Yeah. But some will say no.
Of course not, because they mean business. I mean business. I say I'm an ideological terrorist. We don't like the government at all. We see the government as a horrible enemy. We don't like what's going on, and we don't like the transnational corporations running this country. And eventually, if things go the way it looks like they're going to go, there's going to be a hell of a fight in this country, and everybody's going to be choosing sides.
So it's the warrior aspect of the religion that connotates to the violence?
Yes.
Well, Jimmy, can you explain that a little more to me? Because when I think Viking, I think of, you know, okay, it was way back when, before Christianity, and I'm from Minnesota, three of the Minnesota Vikings.
Sure.
But you know what I mean? I know the Vikings clubbing their women and dragging them with the caves, and
that's not the way it was. The women were doctors and used herbs and all kinds of things to cure people. The women, the guys were hunter-gatherers, the women took care, and when the guys were gone, the women had to even become warriors themselves. And just like our settlers here in the United States, when they went west, the guy may be out plowing someplace, and the woman may be having to fight off the Indians. So the women are equally valuable within that type of community.
So it's not misogynistic in that respect.
No, and I'm one of the first that were considered, you know, racial separatists who tried to get rid of that, because I said, you're just borrowing Old Testament Judaism or old Christianity and putting the women down. We need the women. Women are excellent intelligence agents. They're really good at what they do. And there's been great queens of, Queen Mordecai over there. She swung the sword way back just like a man.
But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I hear about the Eddas, you know, and whatnot. Whatever has been written down, handed down, that still exists, exploring what Oscar originally intended. Is there anything in it that indicates, you know, the white race must keep separate and dominate, or, you know?
Well, they didn't need it because they were separated, and, you know, when they went out foraging, you know, talking about tribalism, they just believed go down to England and conquer a monastery and rape the nuns. I mean, you know, that happened too, but they were, back in the day, we were more naturally by land bridges and oceans and rivers separated. So, but, you know, I'm not the great expert because I don't read every little thing about that stuff. I find things I like about the mythology, and I like this better than other mythologies, you know.
So there are other mythologies you could have grasped onto, or white separatists could have grasped onto, but this one best, in a sense, and I'm paraphrasing here, reflects the kind of movement and the ideals.
You're right, and the origins of so much of our race from Northern Europe and Europe in general, and even Russia and the Vikings that founded Russia and all that. So we feel that lineage, that genetics to those people. But over in Japan, I felt very comfortable with the Shinto warrior class people over there, too.
But I'm getting off track here, but, you know, when I listen to you talk, I just play devil's advocate, and I think, well, what's so wrong with mixing the races? What's so wrong about that? Because you see a black woman and a white man walking down the street holding hands, that must really get you.
Well, I'll tell you what I've done a few times. I've walked up to the black man and I've said, what's a fine black gentleman like you doing with a piece of trash like this? Instead of insulting the black man, I'd say, why aren't you with a black woman? I mean, black women should be absolutely livid with black men who are all the time running after white women. That's the greatest insult to the black womanhood.
But then I think, look at Halle Berry, one of the most beautiful women on earth, supposedly.
She's got a lot of white in her. You see, the ones that are cute usually have a lot of white genes in them. But you see, if you keep mixing, you go down, down, down. You see, now, let's compare it. How come in the TV ads, they never have one of these 300-pound black mammies with a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, good-looking guy in an ad? No, it's always a white, good-looking guy with this sort of black mulatto, not bad-looking gal. You see, why don't they start putting a pure black person, you know, or have a good-looking blonde white girl with a great big ugly black guy? Why don't they do that?
So you're just saying that this is watering down the purity of the race.
Yes.
The mixing.
Right.
Because I've heard the term mud races and all
yes.
these kinds of
things. I have no problem. You know, see, I don't want to go to Africa. Suppress me. I would have been opposed to slavery. I would not have wanted one black person ever to enter North America. You see, I would never been involved with slavery. In fact, the slave people would have probably hunted me down and killed me, because any ship that come over here full of blacks, I'd have turn them around, send them back to Africa.
But even before that, you know, there was always going to be even discrimination within the white race. I mean, for a while it was the Italians and the Irish. They weren't considered to be the pure white.
That goes on, yeah, but those are things that can be overcome. But there's a jump between a pure black person and a white person. It's just hard to bridge. And the mestizo, which is the mixture of the Indian and white, that's a big problem. Your fringes, I always say, well, you got white trash at the top and white trash at the bottom, and they're the ones who usually start that race mixing. Now it's into the middle class pretty badly. That's because they're taught in school that this is a great thing, we're all equal. I don't believe in equality, and I don't believe in rights. These are abstract terms that mean nothing. As far as I'm concerned,
the blacks are not equal to whites.
Nobody's equal to anybody. We're not equal. You and I are not equal.
So there's always going to be some differentiation.
That's great. Okay. That's evolution.
All right. I'm going to get back on track. So when we talk about the movement, the Odinist movement, as you know it, it began to take root primarily in prison. When? I mean, what I'd read was like the last 20 years or so.
Well, no, it didn't take root in prison. It started outside.
But more in the pacifist kind of, and then it splintered. There was
well, no, it's, there was a Viking type warrior type thing. Like I said, I did a TV show with the oldest way back in 83. Way back there, they were inviting me to these things, and they had their swords and everything, and they had their Viking games and all that, a militant type thing, very pro-white and all that. That was way back then. But as time goes on, anything that's on the street, you'll see a prison, you know, and vice versa.
Is it more meaningful and are people more impressionable in prison? And that's why it's changed right there.
Possibly, because a lot of times people feel they need some type of something to keep them going a little better than, you know, it's probably easier than saying, well, I'm just an atheist, you know. However, I'd have no problem. Just give me a bunch of books and I'd be happy.
Because I'd read, you know, just as black, many black imprisoners have latched on to Islam. This is kind of the antithesis of that for white.
Sure. I'm very much acquainted with Islam and Farrakhan's people. I've met with their people several times, and I've been invited to their meetings. And look, there's more separatist ideas among the blacks than there is among the whites. Whenever I get a chance to speak to a black group, I say, look, I don't want slaves. I don't want any power over you. I want you to have your own country, your own army, your own police, your own king, whatever you want. I wouldn't have gone to Africa and messed with you. I'd let you live the way you want. It's not me you have to worry about.
And that's very true. There is that other side. But, you know, to the outsider, you have to, you know, I have to synthesize this entire subject into 4 minutes or so. It's difficult.
I understand.
There'll be people watch the story and go, this whole thing is silly. So what is these people with their swords and their little flats and their mead and their rituals, and we take one? You know, that's just so ridiculous. So how could something so ridiculous, because it's foreign to them, be so influential?
Well, I think it's a lot more attractive than all of the ceremony in the churches and stuff and eating the flesh of Jesus and all that kind of nonsense. I mean, you know, look at the Masons and their little aprons and their little hats. It's, you know, every group that has that type of group organization or whatever, they have their little things. People like ceremony. They do like it. I've never been one that needed it, but a lot of people, they need it. You know, it's just something that the human race likes.
For you, it seems it's just a tool. It isn't the end-all be-all, but it's a tool towards achieving momentum.
Yeah, getting my ideas into somebody else's head and say, look, if you want to be an oldest warrior-type deal, great, I support you 100%. You want to be Christian identity, fine, that's fine. I don't agree with all the mythology, but whatever helps the race is fine with me. And I'm not in a position to tell anybody what to do. I'm not a dictator.
There's no, it doesn't sound like there's anything particularly specific other than the warrior element and the ancestral white European component that lends itself to white separatism.
Well, there's a lot of cultural background as far as the way they did things and the way they, things within the tribe and all that kind of stuff.
Do you think that people who claim that they are into Asatru or believe, I shouldn't say into it like in the past, but that they're believers, that they're faith, that they're denying the reality of what it is, that it is more of a...
Well, my problem was I had my good friend Wyatt Collenberg, who's really been, he's been oldest since way back when he was a Trotskyite. When he was a kid, he was a Trotskyite, and then he became an oldest. He was like my best friend, and but he just kept getting deeper and deeper and deeper into it. Where I said, "Wyatt, you're getting like the Christians. You're getting fanatical on me." I said, "Well, when are we going to solve this thing with the white race?" "Oh no, it's going to be 2,000 years." He was writing an oldest Bible and all this, and you got to not let this stuff run away with you, you know.
It's a tool. Now, you know, in my reading of its connection to white separatism, the first incident that I found that created alarm within those who study this kind of thing was back in the 80s with the Order. But then I've read things that some of these members of the Order weren't per se Odinists.
Yeah, they were Christians, Odinists, and agnostics in the Order. In fact, I just got a letter from one of the Order members today. He's still a Christian, but he was right out there with the oldest people that were in the order doing their thing. So they didn't stand upon any particular belief.
Yeah, so it's a component that plays into it. Because some people might say, how can they be mutually exclusive? You know, they don't really jive. You know, Christians and Odinists, in terms of how can they come together on this front when their belief systems religiously are different?
Well, some can't. I have those kind of people that since I used to be an identity Christian and now I'm not, they just, oh boy, this guy he's lost forever. But there's a lot of people that say, look, come on, we got a bigger problem here. Let's just sort of go along and get along here and agree on what we agree on and disagree. You know, let's put that aside a little bit.
It's like the Democratic Party.
Yeah, we're way outnumbered here, boys.
So you run, is it not true, the organization you run is the White Aryan Resistance?
Actually, it's renamed the Insurgent as of about 3 years ago.
Okay.
Before I left California.
And the credo of that would be what?
Well, what's good for the white race is the ultimate good, and what's bad for the white race is the ultimate evil.
And how many followers would you guesstimate or estimate you have?
I don't know.
But what percentage of those unknown followers would you say are Odinists, and what percentage are more along Christian lines?
Well, I would imagine I have more, I don't say followers, but associates, probably now among Odinists than I would Christians, because some of the Christians just couldn't take it when I said I was an atheist, and that drove them up the wall.
Do you see this as becoming, you know, we talk about it, it's hard to gauge its popularity or the growth of the movement, but there's enough substance in it that you see those who have your beliefs continuing to move it forward.
Yes, because they write some great stuff and great articles. There's a lot of young men. It's a good thing for young men to get into. And, it looks good. We're going to need it. We're going to need we won't be able to survive using Christian ethics in the struggle that's coming.
Are you, now, you know, in a yesterday interview, you know Devin Bernhardt at the Center for, where is he, West? He's right in Chicago, the Center for New Community. You know that group?
Well, it's
kind of like the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Oh, I see.
But an offshoot of that or whatever. And so I interviewed him yesterday. He's local, and I wanted to get more of the objective viewpoint in this story, if you will, between those who are the women I interviewed and you. You're kind of who can analyze, you know, for me, where he perceives And I said, you know, I'm going to interview Tom Metzger tomorrow. Do you know him? And he says, oh, yes, I do. And he says, I go, well, if you were to interview him, what would you ask him? He goes, well, I'd want to know, now that Mr. Metzger is back in Indiana, what he plans to be doing. Is he using the Midwest as a base again for his movements?
Yes. I see Chicago as that's the plum. Chicago is a great town. It's never been actually developed like it should be as far as the white race is concerned. Not that there's not a lot of great people in Chicago, but considering how it has been racially segregated in many ways, I remember once going up there and I asked at a hotel, I said, hey, is there a country western place around here? I was right downtown Chicago. They said, well, you just go get a cab and go up here a mile or so. And I got in the cab and it was black people. I said, what country western here? And then we crossed a certain street and it was all white. And there was the country western place. So, I mean, you know, that is tribalism. That is separatism. It's not bad. It can be good. Everybody knows their territory, you know. But I see Chicago as a very important spot as time goes on, because Chicago and agriculture and farming and the food supply and all that, we're going to need it. And we're not going to let the Mexicans get it, and we're not going to let the Islamics get it. There's going to be a fight. We're going to keep Chicago.
And, because, you know, when I was doing my research here, I looked, there's not even a chapter of the Klan in Illinois.
Well, I'll tell you why. It's because most of them are listening to me and have gone lone wolf in cells, and they're not out in the open. They're covert. We don't operate like they do or like they used to. And another thing, we've had some very poor leadership. Not we, I mean, it's been poor leadership. Guys who are uniform freaks. And the guys who want to go out there and do the Hitler thing and the swastika all the time. The average working guy's not into that. The average working guy wants to hear somebody like Huey Long or like Jack London. Hey, man, I'm just a working guy like you, and we need a working class, white working class movement in this country.
So much of your movement and this whole Odinistic movement that I see is really internet-based.
Well, yeah, a hell of a lot of the whole struggle is internet-based. Internet's been a great boom. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people would like to shut it down, too.
And but, you know, someone would say, oh, this, what are you, about 50-something?
No, 60, I'm 69.
You're old. I'm like, 69-year-old guy, just moved back to the middle of nowhere. Come on, what influence are you really going to have on this movie?
I don't know. We'll see. I don't go around and, you know, draw in front of my house and say, who's with me? I do what I think I should do. If anybody wants to go along with that, you're welcome. If they don't, I'm going to do it anyhow.
So in terms of the feedback you've got, though, you know, people going to your website and however you communicate, you're seeing this kind of sense growing in younger white men.
Yes, and also that they like the idea. I say, now, don't join anything. Don't become a member. Don't talk about what you believe in on the job. Don't have flags all over your house, all that kind of stuff. We're moving towards a time where the state is going to try to eliminate us. I mean, you know, just be covert, keep your mouth shut like you're behind enemy lines, because you're going to be in the unconventional warfare one of these days. And you don't want to tell everybody who you are before the war even starts.
So we're not talking about the noise of that train goes by. No, a lot of noise in Warsaw.
Yeah.
Car alarms,
acting
alarms, ambulances, trains.
I love the sound of the train. I used to live by the railroad tracks as a little kid, about 50 feet from the railroad tracks when the Pennsylvania was coming through here. Boy, I used to love to hear that.
No, it's fine for... my interview. Right by us. Right down the pipe there.
Well, they had the same problems in California. You go out to California and do an interview, they got all kinds of problems out there with noises, different kinds of noises.
So were you in Orange County out there? Where were you?
San Diego County.
San Diego County. Yeah, San Diego's beautiful. That's one of the few places I would live.
Well, I was in a small little town in San Diego County. Fallbrook.
Okay, right.
Yeah,
and which direction is that from San Diego?
About an hour's drive north.
Okay, got it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, what I was saying is you were talking about keeping a low profile or whatever. So we're not talking about the stereotypical vision of skinny.
You almost got it.
Almost got it. Is that what you're saying? All right. Give it a shot.
Back in 20 years ago, I told everybody, the skinhead thing has been great in a lot of ways. But what I want you to do is go to college, let your hair grow out, get a suit and a briefcase, and I want you to get as high up in the system as you can, because we're going to need you. And you're not going to be any good to us just standing around with boots and braces. Now, a hell of a large percentage of those young people listened to me, and they did that. And they now, 20 years later, they are in good positions. They don't go to meetings. They don't have any cards. They're not going to tell you who they are on the job. They may be working right next to you. But from my point of view, now they are valuable.
Let me ask you, and what's his face, Devin said to me too, and he goes, ask him too, he said, I hear you just told me 69. You know, that's 69's the new 49, right? And but I mean, do you see this violent uprising you speak of occurring in your lifetime?
It could happen any time, or it may be 20 years. I think with the economic situation the way it's going, it could happen any minute. I mean, with China holding $2 trillion bucks for credit, all they have to do is change their money deal, and this place, you know, we're a third world country now. We just don't know it. And the only thing that keeps us from being a Bangladesh is borrowing money. That's the only thing that's keeping this thing afloat. And it can't go on forever.
My research, though, shows in terms of violent-related connectivity to Odinism. I mean, they're just sporadic things that perhaps don't really, in the long run, have made any impact. I mean, there was the killing of that Jewish talk show host.
Yeah.
There was some dude who, also in Denver, who killed some Ethiopian refugee on a park bench. There's that thing you were connected to in Portland.
Right.
I've been reading about some prison killings between white prisoners killing each other because they don't think their fellow Asatru person was worshiping the right way. So I'm like, okay, that's all violent, but how is that having any impact on your movement?
It's a negative impact, and I have made that a very strong point. I said, we're not in the business of fighting people on the street corner or jumping onto black people on the street corner, things like that. We want power. And if we're going to do any violence at all, it would be against the CEOs of the corporations, politicians, and people on top, not on the bottom. I want the guys on top to be afraid of us, not some poor guy walking home.
Ritual that they were allowed to have, and you know, that's how I heard about it. So the people were writing stories back then, you know, just bits and pieces about this is the danger. This is going to create problems and destabilize prison population.
Well,
you see that happen?
No, because there's plenty of problems inside the prisons already, and they pretty much racially segregate themselves as much as they can. See, that's a lot of that comes out of the right wing. And see, there's a distinct difference between what I'm doing and what I used to be in the right wing. I'm condemned by a lot of the right wing because I've moved left. Many of my positions are very leftist now, not rightist. And the rightists still keep having this problem where they're not educating these people enough and they're going out, getting drunk, and jumping on people. However, that's a very small percentage of the struggle to do that. But still, it's some good young kid is going to be in prison for the rest of his life, and he's achieved nothing.
So I want to go back to what you said a minute ago. In an ideal world, if you will, based on what you're saying, this Odinism could help indoctrinate people into your movement and utilize the violent notions of it to take out a CEO. Am I paraphrasing that correctly?
Well, I guess it's a simplification, but what I'm saying, I like brave people, brave men, brave women, and the Viking ideal is that image of strength and power, not necessarily indiscriminate violence against people that you're not gaining anything. But I would, I think I could see an Odinist oriented Viking type pulling a politician out of his office and hanging him from a lamppost quicker than I could a Christian-oriented racial person.
Now, you have been linked to some violent things in the past.
Oh, sure.
But are you a violent person yourself?
If you look at my record, I don't have a record.
You don't have a record.
Record.
But have you ever gotten away with it?
Oh, I kill people all the time. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, if I did, you think I'm going to
find this out? I got that. You never know. This is the time to bury your soul, Tom.
That's like,
you know?
That's like they ask when they said that I had to pay 10 or 12 million bucks. So what are you going to do? I said, well, I just wrote them a check. I mean, you know, I like comedy and all that, you know.
So, you know,
no, you can put me on a lie detector anytime you want. I've never killed or hurt anybody, except if they were attacking me. I've been attacked. There have been 5 attempted assassinations on me.
So you prefer to be the puppet master here?
I prefer maybe a general influencing people. People like Mr. Deese or people like this fellow probably in Chicago, they're always saying, well, he just likes to hide back there and manipulate all these people and do his bidding. Well, that's nonsense. It's nonsense. There are people in the military, the people in the government, that they they're back there and trying to influence people to do what they think should be done. There's nothing wrong with that, really, as long as they're not cowards like Bush. I'm not a coward like Bush. So I have stood the line. I have fought in the streets. I have taken the club to my head. They've shot at me and everything else. So I don't have to make excuses to anybody.
Like I said earlier, the people who watch this and go, "Wow, this is just so extreme, so fringe, and so, you know, it's interesting," because I think it's interesting, but it's so unbelievable. There's no way that this religion or belief system and someone like Tom can really get a foothold on public consciousness and evoke change. And there really shouldn't be any need to be concerned about this. What do you say to those people?
That's good. I want them to go back to sleep. When they're asleep, that's the way we want them.
So this is, in your estimation, something that, if I'm not a white suffragist, I should be concerned about.
You should be, because you're going to benefit by the fact of what we are as a white man. When push comes to shove, and if there's massive rioting and so forth like that, it's going to be people like us that help you defend your home and your family and your wife going down to the supermarket. It's not going to be these other people.
Yeah, but, you know, they're still going to say, "Oh, Tom, you're like, just a lot of talk. Just a lot of talk."
Well, yeah, they've always said that, but we'll see. I think I've got a pretty good record. I planted my seeds. I'm old Johnny Appleseed. For 30 years I've been planting my seed, and now if I died tomorrow, it wouldn't make any difference because there's plenty of people to take my place.
I want to see if you agree with the theme of this article I read. This is a big dissertation of it. This is going to be published. You know this guy Randy Blazek? Ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Portland State University. He just wrote something that's going to be in a book.
Where do you say Seattle?
Portland State University.
Oh, yeah. He's a big left-winger.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the wrong kind of left-winger.
This is going to be published in a book that comes out early next year.
Yeah.
And it's When Odin Beats Jesus, Using Racist Religion to do whatever. But he says, this research addresses a phenomenon that has significant implications for the spread of hate crimes, domestic terrorism, racial divisiveness, and the destabilization of prison population. This research explores the appeal of the religion of Odinism. Now, would you say that theme is correct?
You got to understand where people like this guy are coming from. He's an extreme social Marxist. And these guys, in the old days, you'd say they're red, you know, but they have an agenda. It's not just a healthy, I'm concerned about society agenda. They have an agenda, and you have to know what his agenda is.
But you have an agenda, too.
I admit I have an agenda. They don't. They pretend, well, I'm just a regular guy in the community. I'm just concerned about violence and like that. But if you go and follow them around to the meetings they go to and listen to what they're saying, they want to burn down the country half the time, you know, and kill all everything, you know. Like the Marxists.
But what I just read seems to kind of corroborate what you've been saying. That's the ideal of Odin.
Well, whatever, you know, they can write whatever he wants. I enjoy sometimes reading the stuff.
The growth of the religion of Odinism among racist inmates has significant implications for the spread of hate crimes, domestic terrorism, and racial divisiveness. You know, you're not arguing that.
Well, I would argue with it's directly related to hate crimes like that. I think there's more college professors have been involved in crime than our people, to be perfectly honest. But,
this is semantics of society.
If I'm a white separatist and I get attacked, I defend myself, it comes out I'm a white separatist, these are the kind of guys say, "Well, that was a hate crime. He defended himself. We can't have these white racists around. You know, we got to get rid of them."
Right.
You see, so a lot in prison, everybody becomes a warrior, or you become dead. You know, or they put you in high power for taking custody to where the sex perverts are, like that, and they still get them, you know, so it don't matter where you're at. The first thing you learn when you go into prison is get a knife. The second thing you learn is, if somebody comes at you, you got to go after with everything you've got and put them down. Because if you don't, you'll be punked out. And so for him to talk like this is going to add more to it, No.
That's why I don't want to go to prison.
None of us want to go to prison. But, you know, like with Richard Scutari there, he brings more peace among the prisoners than anything else. He works with the blacks. He talks to these people. And he doesn't have any of this violent stuff going on. So some of these people are a calming influence in the prison rather than being one that's it's not a gang.
But Scutari's one, isn't he accused, along with somebody, Peter George Caracos, of supposedly killing some fellow in another case that I've
never was taken to trial or convicted of anything that
implicated or.
I don't know what that was about. I think I heard something about it way back. But
where is Scutari now?
He's at Big Sandy at Inez, Kentucky.
And what did he do to get there again?
He was with the order, and he was charged with destroying the civil rights of Alan Byrd.
Ah, that one. And that's what David Lane was and he just recently died. He was like the grand poobah, if you will, of this movie. No,
well, David went off on the Otis and then even farther, the Wotan thing that he developed, and he was really into it. And he called me all the time. We used to argue because he knew I was. I said, look, I love the mythology and I like that, but I can't get off into really believing this stuff. You know, like I don't believe Jesus rose from the grave, and there's nothing you can do to make me believe it.
Just as you're not going to pray to Thor.
That's right.
Yeah, and his chariot.
But when the lightning comes, my girl, Thor is out there. The gods are bowling, you know. But, you know, it's all mythology.
Right, right. And some would say Jesus is, as well, a fairy tale.
Yes.
To some degree. The last thing I can think of that I want to ask you, there are some people who say that although the Odinism, you know, has taken root among prisoners, or is taking root, that once they get out, if they do get out, they just kind of toss it aside. Like, it was just something to go with in prison to stay safe.
Yes, I know. That happens with a lot of different racial and political ideas, you know. A large share of prisoners do get out and just go in separate ways, you know. I remember Collenberg paid for a guy a bus ticket get out of prison, come out to California and help him, and he got out of prison, he went the other way. I mean, you know, he took the money, you know, so. No, that happens. That's human nature. You always got to understand human nature.
Yeah. All right. I think I have asked everything I want to. Anything you can think of? No? Okay. Anything you want to add that we didn't touch on that you think is important?
I don't think so. I think we pretty well covered it.
All right. Stay right there. We'll just get some wine stuff.
Okay.
Well, you know, I gotta tell you, it's a fascinating subject to me that I've never ever heard of, and you know, I pride myself on knowing some weird religions. My father was a born again Christian, and growing up, that's how I became agnostic because he couldn't answer a lot of my questions, and so the more he pushed the Jesus on me, the more I rebelled as a kid, and I'd be like, you know, Dad, you know, in Togo, Africa, they worship rocks. Now, these are generations of people who've lived and died in Togo, Africa, and they've never heard of Jesus. So
right.
Are they in hell? I mean, it's not their fault that he'd be stumped by that one. And his only answer would be, well, thus the need, Mark, for more missionaries to spread the word of Christ.
Well, my parents were the same way.
Too late.
My parents were the same way.
Yeah. So, but
in fact, my mother pretty much disowned me. I mean, you know,
really?
Back, you know, but I came.
But it took you a while to get to that point.
It did. I was Protestant, and then I was Catholic when I married my wife, and then I Christian identity,
right?
And then I said,
when you say Christian identity, were you a Bible toting, thumping, always attending church, or just a peripheral?
Small groups. I was a minister.
You were a minister.
Christian identity.
In which branch?
Well, it's just Christian identity.
Just Christian identity.
Well, I guess the Church of Jesus Christ Christian, the same one that spawned Aryan Nations, Richard Butler.
Right.
There was a man in San Diego, Bertrand Comparet. Then there was Colonel William P. Gale, and I got in with those guys.
Right.
And they were all Christian identity. And it was a warrior type of Christian religion.
So is there, is my hair okay?
Your hair, but I'm seeing a little bit of